At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. I cannot believe the month of August is already here. It seems like July flew past in about 5 minutes because I'm pretty sure yesterday morning I was on the beach in Connecticut with all my friends for the 4th of July, and now here we are into the second week of training camp, which is pretty hard to believe. In about a little over a week, the Packers will have their very first exhibition game at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. And in about, 4.5 or 5 weeks, the regular season will be underway. And as all of you know, that cannot come soon enough. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I thank you very much for tuning in to our training camp format, which is daily podcasts every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday throughout the next few weeks, pretty much until the start of the regular season, and then we're still working out what the format will be from that point forward. But in the meantime, be sure to subscribe to the Packers Podcast on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, or check our website, JS Online, or PackersNews.com every morning, because there will be a 15 to 20 minute podcast catching you up on all the news, all the notes, all the nuggets that you need to stay up to date with the Green Bay Packers. And it can be on your phone or in your inbox or whatever way you can get this podcast by pretty much around 4 or 5 a.m. every morning. So, without further ado, let's talk about what happened yesterday. The Packers were on the field for another padded practice. It was their second padded practice of training camp, but it followed an off day. Mike McCarthy gave the players Sunday entirely to themselves. They didn't have to be at the facility at all, and so you had guys spending time with their family, you had guys relaxing, and I think I was even talking to one of the television reporters here in Green Bay who said he saw a couple of the rookies shopping for things at Target to put in their dorm room at St. Norbert's College, so that was pretty funny to hear as well. And the Packers were on the field for a long time. This was the second consecutive really long practice. On Saturday, they went 2 hours and 39 minutes, and yesterday they went 2 hours and 35 minutes. So you're talking about the first two padded sessions adding up to more than 5 hours, which is pretty impressive. But before they took the field, Mike McCarthy had a little bit of news to share in regard to rookie defensive lineman Montrevious Adams, who was a third-round pick by the Packers. And Adams did not practice Saturday. He was on the field, but he wasn't in pads. He was just there observing. And McCarthy said that the foot injury that sidelined him is going to keep him out for several weeks at least. There was a report by NFL Network that Adams suffered a stress fracture in his foot, and they're weighing the possibility of needing a screw inserted. Adams visited with Dr. Robert Anderson, who is the renowned foot surgeon that has dealt with Ty Montgomery and Corey Linsley, among others. And Anderson is actually moving his practice here to Green Bay, where he will team up with Dr. McKenzie, who is the Packers' team doctor. So they will be working out of the same practice here in Green Bay. And I think actually Anderson gets started in the next couple weeks here. I think he's out here for a little bit of time, and then he's back on the East Coast in Charlotte, where his current practice is. And as he phases that out, he'll spend more and more time here in Green Bay. So Adams is going to be out for a few weeks, and they have enough depth, the Packers do, to get by without needing Adams. Like I said, he's a rookie, so rookie defensive linemen are not necessarily expected to contribute right away, because defensive line and offensive line are two positions where there's a huge physical difference from college to the National Football League, and that can take some serious adjustment. But based on what his teammates said, it seems like Adams was a guy that was going to compete for playing time right away. My colleague Tom Silverstein had a story in today's paper, and it's up on our website, so you should be sure to check that out, in which he talked to Kenny Clark and Ricky Jean Francois about Montrevious Adams and what, you know, was what was his role or what was his standing in the defensive line room prior to this injury. And I want to read you a quote from Francois, because it was really, really it was just more praise than I would have expected for a rookie. And Jean Francois said, "He's a pretty special kid. When third down comes up, I wouldn't be shocked if he's on that field in the season opener against Seattle. If he's on that field, I'm betting money on him getting to the quarterback first. He has pass rush moves. I just wish he could have developed his game a little bit more." And Francois gave another quote higher up in the story that said, quote, "His pass rush moves are ridiculous. I thought it would take him a while to adjust to the NFL and have to change from college moves to NFL moves, but I think he already adjusted. It's just sad that he got hurt and he's got to sit out a lot." So, you've got a veteran player that's been in the league a number of years calling a rookie's pass rush moves ridiculous and saying that this was a guy that not only was going to factor into the defensive line at some point this season, but was going to be contending for reps in the season opener against Seattle. That's how well he had been playing in OTAs and the first couple days of practice before suffering this foot injury, which likely took place on Friday since he sat out of Saturday's practice. So that was really the only piece of injury news from Mike McCarthy. But once the Packers got out onto the field, you saw a little bit of an update just visually with your eyes. And that was rookie outside linebacker Vince Beagle. He was not in pads, he didn't practice, but at the beginning of every practice, the Packers go through a defensive walkthrough out on the field where essentially they just have the guys line up 11 on 11, and then they literally just walk through the different plays as part of this installation period. So Beagle was out there, not in pads, but he was walking through the different outside linebacker responsibilities that, of course, will be his responsibilities when he comes back onto the field. And that was a significant step in the right direction because, of course, if his foot was in really bad shape, he wouldn't have been out there at all. So perhaps he is going to return sooner than later. There was no official update from McCarthy on Beagle's status, but he hadn't done anything at all out on the field to this point, and so to see him out there participating, even in a very limited manner, was a step in the right direction. Some other things I want to talk about from Monday's practice, and the first one was included in our daily training camp report by Pete Doherty that he wrote for the Tuesday paper, and it's up on our website as well. And as many of you know who have read the Press Gazette or the Journal Sentinel for years now, there's a thumbs up and a thumbs down of every practice. And so the thumbs up is a guy that's playing really well or put on a particularly good show in that practice, and the thumbs down, of course, would be the opposite. A guy who is struggling, or a guy who, you know, really just had a very bad day, and, you know, was clearly worse than a lot of his teammates in that regard. And so who Pete selected was wide receiver Jeff Janis. It's been a really difficult camp for Janis so far from that wide receiver position. You know, I think that Monday's practice might have been the first time that he caught a pass in 11 on 11 drills. You know, this is a guy that has all the physical tools you want. He's got the height, he's got the size, he's got the strength, and he's got the speed. But, you know, we're into now a number of years where he just is not able to mature enough as a wide receiver to contribute on a regular basis at that position. And so far in training camp, not only has he not contributed, but his reps have been dwindling almost on a daily basis to the point where he's hardly in there anymore for 11 on 11 drills. You got to really dig down to the, you know, the third and fourth string offenses for him to start getting reps. And so it's pretty clear that at this point, Janis's only path to the roster, barring some sort of significant change at receiver, is on special teams. And that's really his saving grace, because he has a chance to win the number one kick return job, which is something he's done the last couple of years. And he is also the best gunner that they have, and he's really tremendous on the coverage units. And he needs to continue to excel in those areas in order to make the team. And, you know, the reps that could have gone to Janis you know, earlier in camp, the ones that would have gone to him if he had progressed well, are now going to guys like Trevor Davis, Geronimo Allison, the two draft picks D'Angelo Yancey and Malachi Dupree, and even Max McCaffrey, who was on the practice squad last year, has gotten exponentially more targets than Janis has so far early in training camp. So, again, guys can come on at different points in their career, and to completely write anybody off is foolish and naive, but we're inching closer and closer to the point where Janis is going to be definitively labeled as he is what he is. And what is that? It's a guy that has great speed and great physical tools, but is not an NFL caliber receiver. And he can be used in certain situations like we saw in those reverses and end-arounds last season, but he is not going to contribute at the wide receiver position, barring significant changes at this point. And so he needs to become one of those Dimitri Goodson, Jarrett Bush type players who can just dominate on special teams, because that's really his best and possibly his only path to the roster at this point. Another guy who's struggling a little bit, at least in my opinion, is backup quarterback Brett Hundley. You know, this is a guy who, as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, and I've also written in the paper, last year was supposed to be the summer of Brett Hundley, with Aaron Rodgers taking very few reps in the exhibition games and the Packers slated to play the Hall of Fame game. That was going to be a huge training camp for Hundley, because he was going to get a ton of reps and also get extra reps because of that Hall of Fame game. You know, the game itself never ended up happening, obviously, but in the practices leading up to that, he was really running the show. And so when he got injured and had that sort of nagging ankle problem that kept him out of a number of practices, several weeks worth, really, that was pretty detrimental to his development. And quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt, you know, mentioned that earlier this year when he said, you know, of course it's going to be a blow to a guy's development. Anytime that you miss several weeks of practice early in your career at the quarterback position when you would be getting a majority of reps, there's really nothing you can do to augment that or offset that. And so he was a little bit behind coming into this training camp. And once again, this is an important training camp for Brett Hundley, because he is now in the second to last year of his rookie deal. And so going into the 2018 season, so I'm talking about next year, any trade value that he would have to be exercised prior to the start of next season. And if the Packers are going to find a suitable trade partner for him, it's probably going to take place before the start of training camp next year, or definitely before the start of the regular season. But in my opinion, Hundley has been fairly underwhelming so far in training camp. One of the things that I like to track is interceptions during the 11-on-11 periods, because sometimes guys will throw interceptions in certain drills or one-on-ones and things like that, and it's a little bit different. But I've tracked the interceptions in 11-on-11 periods, and through four practices, Brett Hundley has three interceptions. He was picked off by Demarius Randall and Ladarius Gunter in the second practice, and then he was picked off by Josh Jones yesterday, and what was a horrible interception. And Josh Jones was asked about it in the locker room, and he essentially said, "Yes, I knew Hundley was going to throw the ball to that spot. I went there, and sure enough, he threw it right to me." Now, that's not a direct quote. That's me paraphrasing, but Jones's tone and the way he said it was essentially indicating that it was a blatant giveaway by Hundley. You know, it was telegraphed. He knew exactly where he was going. He went there, and sure enough, there's the football. So you're talking about three interceptions in four practices. Aaron Rodgers has two interceptions in four practices. Joe Callahan has one, and rookie free agent Taysom Hill has zero. And so I just think that there's been a general lack of control as well. I looked at the pass under pressure drill that the Packers did on Monday, which is a drill that works on blitzing from certain angles, and then the quarterbacks have to, you know, either avoid the blitz or step up in the pocket and find a place to throw the football. And Hundley had a really dangerous pass over the middle intended for rookie free agent Colby Pearson that was just... It didn't really make any sense, and Josh Hawkins dove in there to knock the ball away for an impressive breakup, and you know it's one of those throws that you wonder what goes through the quarterback's mind before he makes that throw. And then later on, he was really, really late on a throw to Lance Kendricks along the sideline. Kendricks was wide open, and by the time Hundley finally threw it there, safety Jermaine Whitehead was ready to to get over there and basically disrupt the play and force an incompletion. So you have those two questionable decisions, plus another nice play by Hawkins to disrupt a pass intended for Max McCaffrey. And on top of that, you still have the interception to Josh Jones. So I just thought it was a particularly poor day for Hundley. And, you know, I don't think that he has done much at this point to show the coaches, you know, that he is a capable backup. Now, certainly, of course, there is plenty of time to go, and the body of work that he had from last season behind closed doors once the regular season starts is something that we don't have access to. But from what we've seen in OTAs and what we've seen in the first part of training camp, I think there's a little bit of concern, or at least there should be, about what he's shown in a public setting. And once the exhibition games get going, I think he really needs to do away with some of these mistakes that he's had so far. Take the flip side of that, and a guy who's been really, really impressive is punter Justin Vogel. I know I talked about him on an earlier podcast, but the guy just continues to do a solid, steady, if not impressive job when he has an opportunity to claim this punter spot all for his own. Now, the Packers went through two different punting drills with Vogel on Monday. The first one that they did was sort of this Aussie-style kick where he's trying to pin the ball deep toward the end zone as if he's punting and trying to place the ball in a certain spot, you know, so maybe that guys can down it at the 1 or 2 yard line, or maybe it bounces out of bounds, those types of situations. And what matters most in those scenarios is hang time, because you need to put the ball high enough in the air and have it hang there for a long enough period of time to allow the gunners to get downfield and have a chance to down the football if that opportunity presents itself. And his hang time in that drill was 4.4 seconds, which is very, very solid and very, very respectable. Then later in practice, they did a traditional punting drill where he's going for distance, where he's going for, you know, kicks along the sideline as if it was just a regular punt in the course of a game. He punted, I think it was 6 times, and his average yard was 46.67, which is tremendous. And his hang time on that was 4.3 seconds, which is also very good. So it's been a steady, steady start for this guy. And I think that family night on Saturday is going to be really, really telling for him, because that's the first time he'll be in Lambeau Field in front of about 80,000 people, when there's going to be lights, when there's going to be noise, when there's going to be screaming and yelling and all kinds of commotion going on. And so if he can replicate the performances he's had in that type of environment, boy, that would be a huge statement for the coaching staff ahead of the first exhibition game, which, as I mentioned, will be at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. So that's one thing that I'm definitely going to watch once family night comes around on Saturday and the Packers have their practice inside Lambeau Field. One little interesting nugget I want to pass along. We had our first fight in training camp. These are always fun to see because, you know, anytime you get a little scuffle, it's entertaining. The fans ooh and ah, and it's interesting to see which guys get into it and which guys stay away from it. This scuffle, as I'm sure you could have guessed, as I'm sure the betting odds would have been astronomically poor in Las Vegas, Mike Daniels. Of course Mike Daniels is involved in a scuffle. If there's anybody that has a fiery personality on this team, it's defensive end Mike Daniels, and sure enough, he's involved in the first scuffle. It took place in what is really a run-blocking drill, and actually Daniels wasn't even involved in the play that precipitated the little skirmish there. It was defensive end Dean Lowry against right tackle Brian Bulaga, and after they engaged and after the play ended, their arms kind of got tangled up, and it's one of those things that sometimes you see in basketball where after a guy commits a foul, their arms tangle, and you see one guy just sort of fling his arm out there as if to shed the other guy and get him off because he's frustrated or he feels like the contact lasted a little bit too long. And that was what happened with Bulaga and Lowry. Bulaga seemed to take a little bit of offense to how long Lowry's arms and his stayed locked together. And so he sort of flung his arm up in the air to get rid of Lowry, to discard him. And then at that point, Daniels really got heated, came over, started cursing at Bulaga, shoved him in the chest. Of course, a bunch of guys huddled around him, and it was a little bit of a skirmish. No punches, no wild swinging or anything like that, but it was the first heated confrontation of training camp, and that's one of the things that we like to track as well, you know, just to keep an eye on, because sometimes those things can linger, and two guys that get into it once can get into it again down the road. And of course, with Mike Daniels, this is something that is basically par for the course at this point. He's going to be involved in the scuffles if it involves defensive players, because that's his personality. He's a fiery, competitive, snarling guy, and I don't think anyone was surprised that he would have been in the middle of this. The last thing I want to touch on in today's podcast is about the cornerbacks. And I had talked about and also written that the Packers had the opportunity to shuffle guys through different positions because there's so much undetermined at that cornerback spot. You have Devon House, Kevin King, Demarius Randall, Quinton Rollins, Ladarius Gunter as your top guys. And so with the exception of House, who is almost certainly going to be a starter, all the rest of those spots were really up for grabs. And so I think that what we've seen lately has been rather interesting, because all throughout OTAs, we saw a consistent rotation of guys. And during the very first practice of training camp, again, we saw a consistent rotation of guys. But in that first practice, Ladarius Gunter and Demarius Randall had particularly poor days. Randall seemed to just lose his footing constantly and was slipping and getting beat. And Gunter was staying on his feet, but he got beat a couple of times deep over the top, sort of the same types of issues that you saw last year, where his speed just can't catch up to guys if he finds himself a step or two behind. And ever since then, in the three subsequent practices, the Packers have gone with the same trio of corners in their nickel defense and the same two corners in their base defense. So in base defense, it has always been Devon House on one side and, surprisingly, Quinton Rollins on the other. That's been the case for the last three practices. And then, in the nickel defense, you have Rollins shifting inside to the slot and rookie Kevin King coming outside on the perimeter. So you'd get a trio of Devon House and Kevin King as your two perimeter guys with Quinton Rollins in the slot. And that's been the case with the first team defense for three consecutive days now. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's the group that is performing the best right now. And while it's certainly subject to change, I think it's pretty telling that already the rookie, Kevin King, you know, the first overall pick by the Packers in this year's draft, has already surpassed Ladarius Gunter on the outside, and of course Demarius Randall's reps on the perimeter had gone down anyway because they were using him more in the slot. But Quinton Rollins getting those reps in base defense as one of the perimeter corners, you know, that's an area where he struggled at times last year, and so kudos to him for bouncing back from the groin injury, you know, pretty strongly, at least in his initial impression that he's made to the coaches here in training camp. So I'm really interested to keep an eye on those guys, especially as we get closer to that first exhibition game, because if they can put together a week or so of steady, consistent first-team reps, that sort of shows you not only that those are the guys that the coaches really trust at that particular point in time, but it's also a group of guys that has separated themselves enough from the players behind them that they can maintain first team reps for a full week. And training camp, as we all know, is a time when rotation is most likely to happen. So if they can fend off those guys for a week or more in training camp at a time when rotation is common and expected and basically necessary to determine where guys stand on the depth chart, that's a pretty big statement. So for any of you guys that are going to be out at practice over the next couple days, keep an eye on those three guys and see if they're able to hold on to those first team reps, because that's pretty valuable at this point in camp, the more days you can string together. Anyway, that's all I've got from Monday's practice. We'll have another podcast for you first thing Wednesday morning to wrap up Tuesday's session, which once again is 8:15 Central Time. It's the last time that I'll have a 6 a.m. wake-up call during training camp, because after this, the Packers shift to a couple of evening practices followed by midday practices to finish out training camp. So once again, my name is Michael Cohen. This is the Packers Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. I like the way you brush your hair, and I like those stylish clothes you wear. I like the way the light hit the ice and glare, and I can see you moving way over there. If you want to go and take a ride with me,
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.